Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Nebraska is now open for the transaction of business. Draw nigh, all ye having business with this honorable court, and ye shall be heard. God save the State of Nebraska and this honorable court.
Thank you. You may be seated. And good morning to everyone. Our first case this morning is Korth versus Korth. We will begin by introductions of members of the court and acknowledgement of the attorneys here to argue today. I am Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice, and by order of seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller Lerman.
William Castle. Good morning.
Good morning. Stephanie Stacy.
Good morning. Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik.
Good morning.
John Frank.
Counsel, Mr. Husak, are you here today?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning to you. And Ms. Klingelhofer, are you here today? Okay, Ms. Loom, and I'm sorry, I'm not reading my sign-up sheet correctly. Good morning to you. Counsel, while you are seated at counsel table, we would appreciate it if you remain masked. But when you are presenting to the court, please take your mask off so that we can hear and understand what you have to say. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin today? Thank you very much, Mr. Husak. Then good morning again to you, and you may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So I hope this may it please the court, Mr. Chief Justice, Your Honors. I represent the firm Brunner Frank Shoemaker Hushock, and we represent the appellant Cami Korth. There are two issues here today. One is that the district court abused its discretion when it denied my client's request to remove the minor children from the state of Nebraska. The second issue is that the district court abused its discretion when it gave the appellee physical custody of those minor children, both of which we're asking today that the courts here reverse. With regard to the first issue, the transcript, the bill of exceptions, the information contained therein, I understand this court's gonna review it de novo for abuse of discretion. What you'll see in there is extensive evidence that my client met her burden, with that being the legitimate reason to remove the children, that she was not trying to have any ill will or motives that would be detrimental to the father, that the quality of life would be enhanced, and finally, that the visitation schedule that would be in place afterwards would still be reasonable in light of the quality, the best interests of those minor children. With regard to the second issue, that failed for three reasons. And that's something I really want to work out here with the court today, is that the first is nothing was ever pled with regard to custody. We had no counter complaint, no cross complaint, no request to amend pleadings. We had nothing of the sorts. There was no issue raised by the appellee for custody.
Counsel, we've said in other custody cases that even if no party has requested joint custody, even though it's not addressed in a pleading, that the court still has discretion to address it, and it's not improper so long as the court lets the parties know, hey, this is on deck, so they can meet the proof. Why doesn't that same rule apply here?
The last part of your statement there was that as long as the court let the parties know. We didn't have any knowledge in that case. No pretrial order said this is going to be an issue. No opening statement by the appellee saying, hey, by the way, we're going to request physical custody. Nothing in the closing statement as well.
Did your client make a remark during testimony that suggested she recognized that if she wasn't allowed to move with the children, she'd move anyway, and that the custody arrangement wouldn't work under that circumstance?
She certainly did, Your Honor. And
does that get us to the same place?
I don't think it does, because what happens is we just put a layperson in a position to try making some type of legal or an answer to something that she didn't even know was going to be an issue. Because I believe in that same statement, she said, I see this as, I guess at best, a joint custody situation because he never asked for sole custody. He never pled for sole custody. So my client even acknowledged that she was unsure about what was supposed to happen, but she also acknowledged that at no point did he ask for it, and so it wasn't on the table in her mind.
What's the trial court supposed to do when we have a request to move? We have a statement, I'm going to move anyway. What's the court supposed to do with custody at that point? What's the option?
The option is to, I guess, inquire into better questioning of my client's intent with regard to custody itself. The second would be...
By who? By the court?
By the counsel, the person who's supposed to meet that burden, which would be the appellee. They rely on the case Tremaine. Obviously, in that case, the language that they're relying on is this court saying the district court should have ascertained whether or not the parent would have stayed in Nebraska or relocated in Nebraska in that case if they were going to lose custody.
Your client had to realize, didn't she, that there was a possibility she would not be allowed to remove the children?
Sure. That's always a possibility. We always advise them of that.
And when she took the position in court that she was going to go anyway, I mean, this is not the Tremaine situation. This is, I know it's a possibility that I'm not going to be allowed to move the children, but I'm going. Doesn't that place the issue of custody at least in a situation where you're talking about interstate moves that clearly joint physical custody is not going to work?
There's a way, if the question had been posed after that question, so the question that happened at trial was, and I believe that was by opposing counsel, what are you going to do if your removal is denied? Well, I guess I'm going to move anyway. If the follow-up question, which would be, do you know that means you won't get custody and he will get sole custody? What's your answer then? I think her answer would be different because she was acting with through her testimony under the assumption that he couldn't get sole custody, that wasn't an issue before the court.
Her counsel had the opportunity to ask that question, didn't they?
And that's the questioning that came about after, and I think that's one page that page 116, 117, trial counsel Ms. Frank asked her to kind of clarify, and that's where my client said, well, I'm under the understanding that he can't get sole custody because he never pled for it. So my client was inherently confused on what was supposed to be happening in the event it wasn't granted.
Assume for the moment, and I realize this is contrary to your first argument, but assume we're not going to find an abuse of discretion in not allowing the removal of the children. What are we supposed to do in that circumstance? Reverse for an opportunity for her to change her mind?
You reverse to have an opportunity for the appellee to ask the questions that get the answers that would then show that she actually wants to move despite knowing she would lose physical custody.
So this record is not clear enough.
I beg your pardon. I'm not sure I'm tracking your argument. Are you saying that what she said about moving anyway is unforced error?
Absolutely, because we have a question being posed of an issue that wasn't there at trial, an answer which she didn't know the legal consequences of one way or another, the consequences that have gotten us here today. So to go back and allow an actual record or information that would then answer the question of where her true mind is set in terms of if you lose removal, if you are not going to get to be able to take the kids, and that means you don't get custody, joint, sole, and it switches, then what's your answer? Then we get to the point where we have a clear record of her true feelings on the nature, because no one ever asked her, if you lose custody, this means you lose custody.
Whose burden was it to show that it would be in the children's best interest to be moved out of state to begin with?
Well, that would be my client's burden, Your Honor. That would be our case. To remove the children was the burden of Ms. Forth, to show that a material change of circumstance existed and that is their best interest to change custody over to the appellee. That was their burden. My client met her burden on the removal, at least from the evidence that I've reviewed in the transcript. Obviously, I wasn't there.
Now, this all gets kind of complicated. Your original pleadings stated, did they not, that there was a material change of circumstance.
The material changes.
Children were removed.
Absolutely. But those issues are separate. This court has said that you can't. The removal issue and the change of physical custody issue need to be viewed separately. And I think it was the material change of circumstance issue. So to have those overlap, I think would go against what we try to do to keep things clear, keep issues clear. With regard to...
I beg your pardon. Is your argument then that the trial court erroneously morphed moving and custody into one question?
Absolutely. And that gets to the why, even if we say that they could address the issue of custody, even if we could say that a material change of circumstances exists, we don't have anything on best interest with regard to having to change custody. I think the trial court definitely assumed that he could just mold the factors that are different from the best interest analysis and the factors different from the quality of your life analysis and just mold those together in whatever evidence. We'll just say it all counts as one. I think that's certainly another issue that the trial court did wrong. And by doing that, assuming we get past step one, step two, they fail on three.
If we take just a logical argument, the court is making, if we go with the hypothetical offered by Justice Castle, that there was no abuse of discretion in denying the move. And the only information he has is your client says that she's going to move anyway. What option is there for him to say, okay, the child is not going to be moved, but I'm going to leave custody with mother? I mean, how would that ever play out?
We need to find out if my client truly...
No, I mean, how would that play out right now?
Remand it back for further hearing by the trial court to ask them further questions about the true intent of my client. And also, Your Honors, I'd like to reserve the last 15 seconds for rebuttal if I could.
Thank you very much. Ms. Loom, good morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning, Chief Justice, Your Honors, Counsel, may it please the court. My name is Nicole Loom, and I represent Mr. Joel Korth, the appellee in this matter, who is also present here with us today. As appellee, we are asking that this court affirm the district court's order in its entirety, which denied the appellant's request to remove the minor children from the state of Nebraska to the state of Indiana, along with affirming the district court's decision to transfer physical custody from Ms. Korth to Mr. Korth. Such a decision, which was supported by the fact that Ms. Korth herself testified that she would be moving regardless of the court's decision if the children could go, and that she understood that a custody change would have to occur in that scenario.
Counsel, is it fair to read her testimony as unequivocal, or was there some equivocation about whether she would move or not?
Your Honor, I believe it was unequivocal. There was never a further follow-up or clarification that indicated that were the court to change that custody, that she would change or she would stay, or that she would consider staying. There was never any follow-up questions done by her counsel to dive into that matter. And I would further show that we were discussing earlier what her true feelings are as to what would happen if the court did deny her the request and would change custody. And I say that would go in accordance with her unequivocal testimony, because one thing that is missing from the record completely is a supersedious bond or a motion to stay the judgment. So I would say that her testimony was unequivocal.
I beg your pardon. Is this a question? Is this a correct summary of your position on the law that when, let's call it mother and father, when the mother says, I'd like to move out with the children to another state, and the trial judge denies the request to move, that it naturally follows in the law that the court may thereafter, without further inquiry, look into the best interests of the children, not vis-a-vis the move, but vis-a-vis custody?
Under that general scenario, no, but under the case law established by this court in Tremaine versus Tremaine, once the testimony does indicate that mother is moving regardless, not just that it's moved. Once she makes that affirmative statement that she is moving, under Tremaine versus Tremaine, that material change in circumstance to support the discussion of the best interests for the change of custody, that material change in circumstance then exists, and the court then does have, under the paramount consideration of best interests, the right to consider that.
And so what did the trial court determine was the best interest, which it took into account with respect to the custody determination?
The evidence that was heard on the issue of removal is identical to the information that would have been received by the court on the best interest analysis. Particularly, the court looks to the relationship between the parents. It looks to the preference of the child. It looks towards the current emotional, educational status of the children. And it also looks towards any allegations of abuse. All of that information was covered in the hearing on the request for removal. So there would have been no need to have a second, essentially a second hearing to address that information. The court had it all in front of itself.
Did your client ever move or take any position on change of circumstances? Initially, you pled that there was no change, material change of circumstance, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor, because at the outset of this case, there was no material change in circumstance. The knowledge that Ms. Korth would be moving regardless of the court's order was not learned by Mr. Korth until her testimony at the time of trial. That is the moment in time that material change in circumstance came into existence. And under Tremaine versus Tremaine, as I stated earlier, that was the information needed to secure that material change in circumstance.
But in that case, there was actually a request to change custody before the judge as well. So the groundwork had at least been laid. And here we don't have that kind of groundwork. Was there unfair surprise?
The only person who would have unfair surprise in this situation, I believe, would be my client, Mr. Korth, because Ms. Korth had the knowledge all along that she would be going. And as I stated at the outset, there was no legal basis to support a cross complaint for modification. However, because this issue wasn't raised in Mr. Korth's pleading, doesn't mean that the court can't consider it. The pleadings can conform to the evidence in this case, and this issue was tried by the implied consent of the parties here, as Ms. Korth was the one who raised it through her testimony. I would point the court, while it's not in my brief, I would point the court to Nebraska Statutes Section 6-1115B for amended and supplemental pleadings. That subsection says specifically that when issues not raised by the pleadings are tried by express or implied consent of the parties, they shall be treated in all respects as if they had been raised in the pleadings. Such amendment of the pleadings as may be necessary to cause them to conform to the evidence and to raise these issues may be made upon the motion of any party at any time, even after the judgment. But failure so to amend does not affect the result of the trial of these issues. I believe that statute is on point and controlling in this case, especially when you couple that with the fact that this is a court whose paramount concern is the best interest of these children. There are three children.
I beg your pardon. Does a custody determination implicate a constitutional right of parents?
The custody does, but I don't believe there's an issue of due process here, because as I stated, Ms. Korth was aware and herself rose on trial and stated that, hey, I'm aware custody is going to have to change in some way. She knew this was a possibility. This wasn't a surprise to her, and she was aware that this is a consideration that would be in front of the court. So no, I do not believe there are constitutional implications here.
Isn't your argument about the pleading rule and implicitly tried, wouldn't that, if we apply it in this circumstance, wouldn't it have the effect of eviscerating the requirement that the party have some notice or have some understanding that issue of losing custody, if they're going to move anyway, is actually on the table? Because there's nothing in the pleadings or the motions that were made that expressly or explicitly put that issue on the table, right?
That's correct. And the way that I would answer that, Your Honor, is once again, she was the one who raised this issue. Prior to her testimony, Mr. Korth was interested in preserving the family unit in the Kearney area. That was his goal, not to have a custody battle on what should be changed. Ms. Korth raised that issue, and her counsel had the full ability to, on redirect, on a rebuttal witness, to talk to her about that, to question her, to receive that evidence into the record of, do you understand this? Do you know that this is a possibility that you're facing? If you do, what's the outcome? It was ultimately her burden, and she had the ability to do that and failed to do so.
Haven't we said that moving, standing alone, is not a material change of circumstances?
Correct, Your Honor, but in the cases that I read, I believe those are applied to cases where the parents are allowed to remove the children, where the children are allowed to follow them. So it doesn't necessarily in and of itself provide the non-custodial parent who the children are moving away from to seek a modification of custody on that basis. Thank you. I would like to touch briefly on the first issue that is in front of the court today as well. This is the abuse of discretion in denying the removal request. I do not believe that the district court abused its discretion, as the court is aware, and as appellant's counsel stated, this is a de novo review. However, it is affirmed absent discretion, abuse of discretion from the trial court. The Farnsworth factors were considered here by the district court judge, and within its order, all 9 factors were addressed and weighted based on the evidence heard by the court. The court had the ability and the opportunity to observe the witnesses and was able to attribute weight to each of those factors based on those. There is clearly enough evidence within the record to support the district court's decision on denying the custody, where we have a very involved and active father who loves his children and would suffer greatly with their relationship from losing that day-to-day activity that he enjoyed with them, such as coaching their activities and even just transporting them to those activities.
Were there disputes of basic facts? I'm not talking about a dispute of an ultimate fact, but basic disputes of fact where the parties, we have one where one side is saying it's blue and the other side is saying it's red, or are they just emphasizing different facts?
I see I'm out of time, Your Honor. May I answer your question?
You may.
Okay, thank you. I think generally the facts were not in dispute. There were a few areas where I believe you do have the different color scenarios, such as the amount of the mother's involvement with the children when the parenting plan did not specifically say it was her time to be involved with the children. I think generally the evidence otherwise does show about similar facts. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
12 seconds, Your Honor.
12 seconds, Mr. Husek.
Your Honor, I'll just say 2 things. One, it's not our job to ask follow-up questions to meet their burden. If they didn't do sufficiently, that should have been that. Secondly, the removal factors all either cut in favor of our client or were a wash, or as some of the language we've used, doesn't matter. And so with that, we ask that you remand the case. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments in Korth versus Korth. Counsel, when you leave today, please continue to appropriately distance yourselves and wear masks if at all possible. And please use the side door here to my left and your right as you leave. You are excused, and the court will go on to the next case of the day, which is Davis versus Ritter.